Cofield and Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
If you're really getting that worked up about it, why does it matter? Like, I don't care.
Looks like a national champion.
You know what time it is? Hey!
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday, a Hockey Tuesday, a Vegas Golden Knights Tuesday. Knights on the road, beginning a, much-awaited road trip. I've never heard of anything like this, but apparently the Knights were at home for too long. It's a weird one, right? Well, that's kind of what they're leaning on as they closed out the homestand in not-so-hot fashion. So tonight, they get their wish, beginning a long road trip, which includes a break for the All-Star weekend, so not back in Vegas for some 20 days, and the long journey on the road begins in lovely Buffalo. Puck drops at 4. You can come down here to Pizza Rock, Green Valley Ranch. We're going to be at Pizza Rock for select VGK games the rest of the season. You come down with your gear on, and you get a free beer. And, of course, all the great pizza to choose off the menu. Happy hour starting at 3 o'clock with food and drink as low as $4. Ari, let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Crazy night last night with the national title game. Crazy night for football. That was fun. So we may have a little snark today, but not much. Today's mostly going to be a celebration of college football, and especially the LSU program. I had a boatload of fun following and watching the game like we do now, at least I do, and many others do in 2020, and that was also seeing the reaction on social media. And if your response is, how come you can't just sit there and watch the game? Because I can't anymore. Because I want to hear what other people have to say, so I thought it was great. So we'll give you a little sampling of what other people were saying, certainly what I thought, as LSU wins the national title. And really, the only griping I heard was a little bit here and there, because it was a fascinating game, even though the margin at the end was pretty big. The only griping I heard was the late start time on the East Coast, to which I wanted to throw out there, move. But that's not easy for everybody, right? The West Coast is the best coast, especially for sports, and it's getting worse and worse with the start times for the East Coast people and even the Midwest folks. Hey, last night ended really, really late. That said, I don't care. I live out here. I also don't care about length of games. I saw some of that griping as well. I'm there to watch a game. For me, it's one of the fun passes of the day. Not that I have some miserable life. It's my job. So I don't care how long the games go. You know where the ultimate spot would be? To watch the game yesterday? I guess a little happy hour, right? You do happy hour here. You can really do happy hour early in Hawaii. I'm sure folks in Hawaii were having a really good time watching LSU beat up on Dabo and Trevor Lawrence. But those who are real football fans, probably 3/4 into the game, got a freaking throat punch. God, that sucks. Did you see that a sixth Mountain West Conference football program lost its coach? Now, many of them fired their coaches. Others had coaches move on. But Hawaii lost its coach. What is it, January 13th, going on January 14th, right, last night? They lost Nick Rolovich. It was kind of buried in that fourth quarter of the national title game, but it's a big freaking deal on a lot of fronts. And I promise we'll get to a national title reaction here in less than 5 minutes. But this is a big story, not only for Mountain West fans, UNLV fans. Also, it's a big story around college football. So Nick Rolovich, guy who played at Hawaii, you know, perfect fit to run the program, had been doing a really good job making bowl games, you know, doing stuff that UNLV wishes it could do, right? That's what they're hoping they're going to get with Marcus Arroyo. Rolovich was making it a regular deal that he was going to bowl games. You know, hopefully attendance was going to grow. It's kind of a weird environment down there. They don't get a ton of fans out at the Aloha Bowl. But it was a rousing success with Nick Rolovich, who's still a young guy. He's a fun guy. He's a personality guy. Would come out here for Mountain West Conference Media Days, always bring some sort of Vegas-themed character with him, whether it was Elvis. I think, was it last year he had, not even really a Vegas theme, but I think he had a fortune teller who was with him, which is really fun. Well, Washington State got jobbed and lost its coach a little later in the game when Mississippi State decided to freak out. And believe me, Mississippi State and the SEC in patience will be mentioned as the show moves along, because LSU, I think, sent a nice message about sticking with your coach. But Mississippi State steals Mike Leach. Wazoo opens. That's where Leach was. So now you got a Pac-12 job. These Pac-12 schools have all the money in the world, even the crapola programs. And not that Wazoo is a crappy program, but, it's generally going to be kind of in the middle of the pack or the bottom of the pack. But they've got money. So does Oregon State. Cal, debatable if they have money. They have money, but they've had trouble balancing the budget there. The athletic department's been a mess. So Washington State reached out to Rolovich, and at that point, Hawaii, which is cash-strapped, Rolovich was already currently the lowest-paid coach in the Mountain West Conference, because there's been this freaking explosion of salaries around the Mountain West Conference, especially of late. Craig Bohl got stolen from North Dakota State a couple of years ago. He got over $2 million a year. This is at a time when the regular salaries, the norm in the Mountain West Conference, would have coaches between like $500,000 and $800,000. This guy gets $2 million. Then Colorado State goes crazy. They bring in Mike Bobo for upwards of $1.7 million. And then this most recent year, after schools blow out the coaches, well, now you're trying to get coordinators from other schools. Well, those coordinators of Power 5 schools already make $800,000, $900,000, $1 million. Hell, in the case of Dave Aranda at LSU, he makes $2.5 million a year. How are you going to get a head coach in a Group of Five Mountain West Conference if you're paying head coaches $600,000 and $700,000? And, that was kind of the range where Tony Sanchez was. So coaches get blown out. You want coordinators from other programs, from Power 5s, up-and-comers, former Power 5 head coaches, then you got to pay big money. So Steve Addazio checks in at Colorado State at like 1.5. Marcus Arroyo gets a salary here at UNLV in town of 1.5. I think Kalen DeBoer, who's the Fresno coach, he checks in at a salary of like 1.3. New Mexico works out some sort of deal with Danny Gonzalez, who was at Arizona State and before that San Diego State. Even he's getting at New Mexico, which is very cash-strapped, like $750 a year. So Rolovich looks up. He's like, wait, I'm one of the lowest-paid coaches in the conference. I'm making a bowl game just about every year. We're bound for success. We got a nice program here at Hawaii. And the reports were, about a week ago that Rolovich was going to get a bump. But a bump was probably going to mean $100,000 or $200,000, which, hey, nice for the rest of us. But when you're a college football coach and you look up and all of a sudden, Marcus Arroyo, never a head coach. Kalen DeBoer, never a Division I head coach. Steve Addazio, two-time, we'll go strong and say failure. I think that's a little too strong, but actually wasn't a two-time because he was a successful coach at Temple. But anyway, he's making big money. What choice does Rolovich have? Now, here's the brilliant part about Nick Rolovich. He didn't stick around for a small bump. He didn't go slightly up the ladder. He goes right from Hawaii to the Power Five. He is now making $3 million a year. How about that? So, sucks for Hawaii, though. We'll try to track someone down here in the next 3-4 days who's down with Hawaii football, maybe Rich Miano, who played there and does some of the TV color stuff and has been on our show a couple of times, former Jet and Eagle. I don't know where the hell Hawaii's going now. Maybe they'll surprise like many others. I guess a lot of these programs, people thought, hey, they had no money, but they found a way to pay these coaches. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Hawaii, but the Mountain West Conference now will have 6 new coaches next year. 6. Hawaii, Fresno, San Diego State, because Rocky Long walked. I think that was over money. UNLV, Colorado State, New Mexico, all with new coaches, and you would have to think out of the gates, give a little uptick to those that kept their coach and the continuity, like Reno, like San Jose State, Boise, Air Force, Utah State, and Wyoming, although Utah State's coach is only in his second go-around because they lost their coach a year ago. So LSU wins. Awesome job. And I'm not going to say I saw this coming, although my pick was LSU, relatively easy, and it wasn't very scientific. Basically, it came down to there are times when you've got a team that is hot as hell, is having a monster season, has a guy that is a generational type player. Now, Joe Burrow may go on to the NFL for the Bengals and be Akili Smith. I don't know. But what he is in college is so far above the rest of the field, and Clemson had about 10 minutes of success in slowing him down. And then once LSU made some adjustments against that Clemson defense, it was on, and it was freaking blowout time. Dude piles up over 450 yards in the air, 5 touchdown passes, runs for another one. I think that was as impressive as him hitting everyone in stride or, hell, throwing receivers open, and he's great at doing that. I thought as impressive as anything, which will blow away the NFL, as the NFL looks for more and more mobile quarterbacks, Joe Burrow's legs freaking crushed Clemson. Clemson kept allowing a gap to develop in the middle of the field as they were trying to cover all these receivers. And Burrow's like, yeah, I'll tuck it. I'll go 12. I'll go 15. I'll go 8. So he had a great game on the ground. And, yeah, again, it was a real simple pick. LSU is just really, really good. I think they had proven that going in. My attitude now on how the rest of the Final Four was put together and the teams that got left out, I actually think there's a bunch of teams that are all the same level, about 7 that are all the same level behind LSU. That includes Oklahoma, who got their ass kicked in the semis. And the next 5 or 6 teams are all about the same, but they're just 10 to 14 points worse. Alabama played them to 5, 46-41, but for the most part, they're about 2 touchdowns worse than this LSU team. And Burrow's just one of those magical players. If you look back in history, there's a certain years, you know, Cam Newton, out of nowhere from a college football standpoint. I know his story, Florida, JUCO to Auburn, that was a guy who carried his team. There have been running backs in certain years who have just been monsters. You have to go back a little further. You know, Vince Young, head and shoulders above the competition, right? He was a freaking monster. If you look at what Joe Burrow did this year, he's one of a kind. He's a player of the decade. The guy wound up contributing 65 touchdowns in one freaking year, 5 on the ground, 60 passing touchdowns. He closed out the season last 3 games, 70% on his completions, 1,305 yards last 3 games. And keep in mind, the last 3, they aren't against the Western Carolinas of the world. Against Georgia, Oklahoma, and Clemson. 16 touchdowns, no interceptions. As I said, the rushing game was impressive as well. He scored 18 touchdowns in 3 freaking games. It just happens sometimes, folks. LSU was awesome. No one could compete with him. Dabo with a great team and time to prepare and a historically great record in these games and 10-1 against the spread. Even he couldn't get his team to get to the level of LSU. Totally awesome. Totally awesome season for LSU. So I got my pick right. I picked LSU yesterday, and I picked LSU big, but I will come back with a full admission that I was totally wrong on something about LSU. I mean, like, embarrassingly wrong. And frankly, a lot of people should have been running to their radio shows, to social media, to also admit they were wrong, but I'm not gonna name anyone else. I know I was wrong on something big time when it came to LSU.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
Been here before theory, no respect theory, and LSU's defense.
As Room makes it cut, pays the price, lost the ball. Lawrence coughs it up at the end of the run. LSU
LSU's got the football, and they got one hand on the trophy.
They don't get to the quarterback that much. Trevor Lawrence going to have time to throw.
So I will take Clemson in a shootout. Going to be fun, 38-30 over LSU.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
That happens sometimes. You hear the call on ESPN. It happens, man. We get picks wrong. Colin, poor Colin. Although he wasn't alone, was he? We told you yesterday, this LSU-Clemson game, most of the sharps thought Clemson was getting too many points. Poll in the local paper, in the RJ, 40 experts, air quotes, especially air quoting myself because I was included, 40. 26 had the dog winning outright. 34 had Clemson, that dog, winning outright. Covering the spread. 26 had them winning outright. 85% said ATS Clemson would be in the game. They very much were, and then they very much weren't, and just couldn't scramble in the second half. And they got screwed a bit. We'll get into that. And the psyche when you get jobbed on some calls. We're going to talk to former college quarterback and analyst for UNLV on radio, Caleb Herring, in less than 10. But listen, bottom line, LSU was the dominant team all year long. They're at least a touchdown better than anyone in the country. There are years where this happens, and this kid, Joe Burrow, is just, he's magical, and no one figured out how to stop him. And in game, Clemson had some answers for a little bit, and then they just got out-schemed. Their back end couldn't cover the freaking receivers, and Burrow just picked them apart. And even worse, you try to get more help on the back end to cover those receivers, you leave the middle of the field open, and then Joe Burrow is out there running all over the field, which if I were the Bengals or whoever takes him, that would have me as excited as anything. So this is one of those rare times where I nailed it with not only the pick, but I thought it would be a blowout. I had 45-24. It doesn't quite get there. Damn field goal miss. I almost had it, right? Close. But I had it 45-24. I thought it would be a blowout. But before I sit here and, pat myself on the back, I also have to come clean. And as I was saying a couple minutes ago, a lot of folks should. Ed Orgeron proved a lot of people wrong, and I'm not going to slap it on anyone else except what I said here, and I know why I judged it this way, and it was kind of a simpleton take without really knowing the guy, although apparently college administrators had multiple spots, even knowing a lot more about Ed Orgeron made the same mistake. He's a good coach. He's a great recruiter. Getting Burrow was a program changer. There's no doubt in my mind now that in the state of Louisiana, which is really talent-rich for football, he's going to completely clean up and kick ass, and it's going to be tough for other SEC schools to go in there. He should do really well head-to-head against Alabama and the other powers in the SEC. And frankly, LSU has always been a big enough brand if they're winning. And in this case, they've got a guy with a big personality. Like Orgeron, LSU can now go and pick whatever sweet spot it wants and grab players from around the country. It can kick ass in Florida. Urban Meyer was talking about Ohio State's approach over the years recruiting, and Urban Meyer pointed out that, hey, when certain programs are down in traditionally strong recruiting areas, guess where we go? There. Because we can already get in the door because we're, a big-time program. Now I'm just kind of paraphrasing, but we can already get in the door because we're a power program. Now we got the local program that normally would have an advantage because of proximity. They're down. Step on their neck. Take all their players. And now Ed Orgeron can probably do that anywhere around the country. But, yeah, it was 2017. He had taken over as an interim, right, for Les Miles. They go 6-2. I thought he was a terrible choice to be the full-time head coach. He had flopped at Ole Miss. He also, for me, had gotten under my skin because he pissed and moaned that he didn't get the USC job. We'll get into that whole angle. The West Coast schools looking down their nose at Orgeron. But, you know, I bought it. I bought the West Coast take on that. So I thought Orgeron was just kind of a loudmouth. I'm like, dude, you're not a head coach. You're not a head coach. You're a, you know, big, blustery dude, coach the line. Maybe you can be a coordinator. But there are certain guys who are just not cut out to be head coaches. You hear the guy speak. You know, if you don't know him and you're not around him a whole bunch, you're like, what? What is he saying? This guy's not going to be the CEO of my program. So if you go back to 2017, I remember ranting and raving. They came out of the gates where he's the full-time coach. They get bombed by Mississippi State. Then 2 games later, they lose to freaking Troy. Troy. Their homecoming game, I think they – I don't know what they paid for that one. They paid like $1.5 million to freaking lose against Troy. And I remember just going off. I'm like, LSU is so stupid. And on top of that, they hired the guy, and he bent him over a barrel. He's got this massive buyout. They're screwed. Well, I was wrong. He's a great coach. It took him a couple of years to get his guys in there. Most importantly, get Burrow in there. He's awesome. And they're going to be a dominant program unless something happens to him or they just completely fail in terms of recruiting quarterbacks. They're going to be dynamite, so lots of people should be saying it. Don't care about the other people. I will say it. I was wrong about Ed Orgeron. He's a really good coach. He's absolutely in the right spot. He's a Louisiana guy. They freaking love him. He's got a certain charm about him. Yeah, he's rough around the edges. Maybe the most important thing about the dude is that from an ego standpoint, and I don't know how big his ego is, I just know this from the outside looking in, his ego isn't big enough that he's hurting himself by having weak assistants. He's got assistants on that staff who have names. We talked about Dave Aranda earlier. He's making $2.5 million a year. Aranda can be a head coach somewhere. He's got this kid, Joe Brady, who literally is turning – he's the passing game coordinator. He's 30 going on 31. He's turning down NFL opportunities to stay at LSU. He's a rising star. And Orgeron is not only smart enough to have that guy on the staff, but to make sure that even the NFL can't grab him. And then he's got an older coach at OC who obviously is doing a really good job. So he's got a qualified guy there. So that's the greatest thing about, you know, big-time head coaches, that they realize they can't do it all. They need help. There's no ego play. They're going to have, you know, good guys next to them on offense and defense. And Ed Orgeron did it. I was wrong.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
From now until you meet with your coaching staff, how do you spend this time with your family and friends?
You know, we're going to go back to it. We got a nice suite. I got Kelly and my 3 boys with me.
Uh-huh.
We're probably going to get a ham sandwich or maybe some boudin or something, go to bed and wake up tomorrow and do it again. We just simple folks. We love our life. I love my family. My personal time with them is going to be, we don't go out. We don't do things like that.
I got
and,
you.
We represent the state of Louisiana, so we're excited.
You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I feel like with a voice like that, you do go out. But I think Orgeron did a lot of his going out as a coach on the rise, and now he's a family guy, and he mentioned – I think he was going to get more than just a ham sandwich. That sounded kind of plain. I don't think Mother's is open at that time of night, but you can get some ham over there. I'm sure he got a nice ham sandwich or boudin, as he said, right? A little sausage ball. I'm sure he celebrated. I know the other – I was seeing some stories from reporters around the other LSU staffers. They were having a good time, and all of New Orleans exploded. So, great job by LSU, headed up by what Joe Burrow did. Caleb Herring played college football, analyzes college football now. Caleb, what did you think last night? That was it was pretty clear LSU was a touchdown or 10 points better than everyone in the country.
Yeah, it was pretty clear all season that they were, you know, head and shoulders above the rest of the pack, and they pretty much proved it. Although, you know, Clemson came out and gave it as good a show in that first quarter as you could have against them and kind of had them trying to sort things out. But in the end, everything I think worked out how it should have and how, you know, everything was expected to, with LSU and Joe Burrow being just the next level of college football this year.
Why is he so good? What did you see last night that impressed you?
Well, the thing about him is it's clearly he's capable of, you know, the physical abilities, the agility in the pocket, throwing wise. He can make every throw on the field. He's athletic enough to make plays with his leg, of course. But the thing over these past few games has shown to me that it's his preparation, his mentality. And part of that is probably the fact that he's a fifth-year senior. He's just been around the game a little longer than most at his age. I mean, he's older than who, you know, has been mentioned a few times, Lamar Jackson, who's likely going to be the NFL MVP this year. He's older than him. So he's been playing the game for a long time and at that level, even though, you know, the things didn't work out with him initially having to go transfer over, just being around the game, I think, and then preparing mentally. You could see it, the way he was processing early. And I know people were saying he's rattled early and Clemson getting to him, the pressures and all this kind of thing. But watching the game the way I watched it, I saw a guy that was out there calculating and figuring out, along with his coaching staff, of course, who does a great job of game planning and getting things together. But I saw Joe Burrow processing what was going on. Clemson threw some new looks at him, some exotic blitzes that were different, some pressures, some bluffs that kind of had him wondering a little bit. And any other quarterback, I think, makes disastrous mistakes, throwing picks and throwing balls into coverage where you didn't see that. He was able to kind of compose himself through that, take that first punch, and once he figured it out, he got to be the Joe Burrow that throws for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns in the national championship game. So his mentality, his preparation, and his understanding of the games and situations and how to counterpunch and be right against a defense no matter what, I think that's what makes him stand apart from other quarterbacks right now.
Those LSU wide receivers and then Moss's kid, a tight end, maybe just too talented for the back end of Clemson?
No, that's exactly what happened. I think Clemson rolled the dice a little bit and said they got the athletes to stick with their receivers on an island and man-to-man coverage, and we're going to play this pressure game with Burrow. And you saw Ja'Marr Chase, who's just a sophomore. It's ridiculous that he's a sophomore. Chase had 9 receptions for 220 yards. Could have had a third TD, ended up with 2 TDs. But man-to-man coverage, he absolutely had his way with the secondary of the Clemson Tigers, which I think was their game plan. They wanted to put their corners on an island, and they were going to be physical, and we're gonna disrupt the timing of these routes. And it worked for, you know, much of the first half into the second quarter. But once Chase got a rhythm, and of course Burrow putting the ball wherever it needs to be to beat the tight coverage, those receivers, like you said, are special, and they're going to be back. Especially Chase, he's going to be one of the top receivers whenever he does enter the draft. So he's not even eligible right now. That's crazy to think that he's not even eligible. And if he left this year, he could possibly be one of the top 2 or 3 receivers taken in the draft just based on what he did this year with Joe Burrow and that LSU offense.
Caleb Herring is on the horn with Cofield and Company. Why was the middle of the field so open for Burrow on all those scrambles or even design runs?
Well, it was exactly for the same reason. I think the pressures that they were bringing called for man coverage in the back end. And most of the time, when you play man coverage, nobody accounts for the quarterback, especially Joe Burrow's not necessarily a scrambler. You got Lamar Jackson type quarterbacks who are running quarterbacks who you better have a spy on them and be aware of them. Joe Burrow, you have to have guys in coverage in order to stop that potent passing game. So you're more focused on that aspect of it. But then the intelligence of Joe Burrow taking what's given to him, seeing that man coverage every time, you know, guys' heads are turned running with their receivers downfield. And if you bring a pressure or a blitz, and they just hit the wrong gap or get caught up on the inside and he gets on the outside or around them and right down one of those lanes in the middle of the field like that, the season parted for him. He gets picked up big chunk yardage like he was doing. He's fast enough once he gets an open field to make those kind of plays, but that's not his forte. It's not what he wants to do. He's a play extender who wants to pass the ball downfield, and I think Clemson wanted him to stay and try to pass, and they were, you know, covering with 8 defenders at times and one linebacker in the middle kind of green dog blitzing, kind of waiting and trying to shoot a gap late. But Burrow was smart enough to pick his spots and be effective in running against that man coverage.
So I really liked his running ability. He's a guy I think if you know, when he goes to the NFL, not saying he's going to rush for, you know, 1,000 yards, it's not going to be Michael Vick, he's not going to be Lamar Jackson, but he could be a guy who gives you, you know, 200 to 400 yards on the ground a season. So I was trying to get a little crazy and make some quarterback comps, and I picked some really good quarterbacks to compare him to, and I was also trying to match it up from a size standpoint. And right now, I must have nailed it, because my list, everyone on my list on this poll question is between 20% and 31%. There's 4 choices. You ready?
Yeah.
Joe Burrow equals this former NFL quarterback: Steve McNair, Donovan McNabb, Warren Moon, Roger Staubach. Now, those are all really good guys. So people responded, they're like, hey, it could be Andy Dalton. You know, and I fired back. I'm like, he could be Akili Smith. I don't know, but I'm just, you know, upside because he can run a little bit. Those guys all ran between like 1,700 and like 3,500 yards for their career. They weren't Michael Vick, they weren't Lamar Jackson, they weren't Steve Young, but they had enough mobility to be dangerous, and they all had, you know, very good throwing ability.
Absolutely, and I think that's kind of ballpark where he would fit. It's not run as a number one option, a primary option. You're never going to put, you know, the read option as one of your key plays in an offense with Joe Burrow, but I would almost even put him near Steve Young. Now, Steve Young ran differently because he was a tough runner and he ran aggressively to get yards when he did decide, but I think what makes Joe so effective in the run game is that he's so decisive about it. It's not, there's not a lot of hesitation. He's not scrambling out thinking, maybe I should run, maybe I shouldn't. If he's going to tuck it and run, he tucks it and runs. He gets up north and south and really gets the yards that hurt you. He's not going to wow you with anything. It's mostly straight lines and just understanding the spacing and getting what he can. But he makes the decision and goes. So I agree with the four that you picked there. And if he did decide to have the mentality, should it ever become necessary, with his athleticism, I think he could almost jump into that Steve Young category where he's a little bit more effective and more intentional with his running ability.
Let's talk Trevor Lawrence. Was that the LSU defense and what they were throwing at him, or did he just have a sloppy game with all those overthrows? 13 overthrows by Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Trevor Lawrence, and I feel for Trevor Lawrence in this instance, in this case, because he's just a sophomore, and we put him on this pedestal because he's a part of a great team that plays in a weaker conference in the ACC, so he doesn't have the strength of schedule or these kind of opponents on a regular basis, but we catapult him instantly to this stardom of being one of the best quarterbacks in the league or in college football, which he can be. He will be there by the time he gets, you know, draft eligible, and if he stays into his senior year, he'll be the top guy for sure. There's no doubt about that. But what I saw was a guy who's just a sophomore and has a lot of mechanical issues that aren't necessarily that he's not able to sit in the pocket, deliver a throw with accuracy and from a strong base in the pocket. It's not that he's not capable of it. It's that he's a sophomore and he hasn't learned how to take that mentality of the focus it takes to, under pressure, under duress, while sliding in the pocket, remember to get your feet back together before you deliver this pass. And that's why he saw a lot of those balls fail. His base was bad. And it's just part of growing up in the game. A lot of the times, these great quarterbacks, like, nobody was talking about Joe Burrow when he was a sophomore because he wasn't really playing. He was learning and developing his skills. And then now you see the finished product in his redshirt senior year of how good he can be. What we're watching is Trevor Lawrence grow up before our eyes. He went from a true freshman last year, a true sophomore this year, playing on this national stage. And these are the kind of mistakes that a sophomore makes. He's going to be inaccurate sometimes. He's going to have bad footwork. He's going to do things in the pocket that maybe have some head because you know how talented he can be. So I think he's going to be fine, but we saw these kinds again from him in September of this season, when early in the year when Clemson kind of struggled out of the gate, and he struggled in particular. So it's not like this is something new. He's a great player who's going to be great and do great things for Clemson and go on to have a great NFL career, hopefully. But he just made sophomore quarterbacking mistakes, and that's all I think it was this game.
Hey, just to update something I was saying earlier, I was ranting and raving, really raving, about Ed Orgeron, making sure that he holds on to great assistants, has great assistants, and then literally right before I was going off about Joe Brady sticking around as a passing game coordinator, I guess he got a monster offer from the Carolina Panthers to be the OC, which, you know what? Let's go next level here. Shouldn't the Bengals have paid Joe Brady whatever he wanted to be the OC with Burrow if they're taking Burrow one?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been a chemistry match made in heaven to make that transition to the NFL with a guy that you're familiar with, who obviously the franchise is all in on if they go draft Burrow number one. And basically, kind of secure yourself from a security standpoint with that kind of move, because Joe Burrow has a relationship with you and you go there. And then Brady obviously has an offense that Burrow is comfortable with, makes the transition easier for Burrow as well into the NFL, which in all likelihood, that's going to be the number one pick. I think the Bengals have to have a really different plan if Joe Burrow doesn't end up being the number one guy. But, you know, like you said, the offer had to be massive, and everybody has a price, especially during in this sport, in this business. You don't know how long you're going to be hot for. You don't know how long your name's going to be the name in sports. And Brady's name right now is the name in sports and in college football because of what he was able to do with LSU. It's him capitalizing on the situation. It's one of those things where your destination in life probably wasn't just the pass game coordinator for LSU. That probably wasn't his dream destination. And he did everything in his career to this point to achieve something. And maybe NFL coaching success is one of those things he wants to achieve. But, of course, the dollars are there. And he's going to a Panther team that has some pieces as well with Christian McCaffrey, who's an offensive monster too. That, imagine being an offensive coordinator with that guy as one of your weapons to use. So we'll see. Hopefully the best for him. But, yeah, great job by Ed Orgeron getting him there. But, I mean, it's tough to keep a guy who's that hot, who's red hot as an offensive pass game coordinator.
Caleb, we got a minute left. It was interesting last night when they were talking about Trevor Lawrence's 13 overthrows. UNLV football got a shout-out. Not a great one. Kenny Noblad, actually, that was the high this year, 13 overthrows in one game. He did it against Boise. That was his first start, so, you know, people were making some cracks last night. But I did fire back on social media. People should look at the last five games that Kenny Noblad had, and he grew a lot down the stretch. Had 10 touchdowns against just 3 interceptions. What did you see in terms of growth in those final five games?
Well, you said it there. I think the composure, definitely. He settled into the role of being a quarterback at this level a little bit. The speed of the game, I'm sure it slowed down for him a little bit. And he eliminated some of those mistakes, and then he built on his game. And by that, I mean he added that running dimension late in the season where he used his legs effectively in some spots for the Rebels. And I think that kind of relaxed him and gave him just another tool on his belt to use in his career. So I definitely saw some improvements for him. Hopefully the accuracy continues to grow. And we think about it, him and Trevor Lawrence aren't that far apart in age. I mean, they're both relatively young, so they're both going to go through growing pains like that, and that's kind of a part of the position. But they're both growing up in front of our eyes on TV and on Saturdays during the game. So we'll see what the future has for Oblad as well as Lawrence.
Caleb, we appreciate it. We're squeezed by some time limitations. We want to get you on soon because obviously there's going to be some, you know, big news here in the next 3 weeks when the UNLV commit class finally comes out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be an exciting time to talk some Rebel football then.
Thanks, Caleb.
All right, Steve. Have a good one, man.
You too. There you go. Former UNLV quarterback Caleb Herring. I'll get you an interesting note on another confirmed visitor. There are a bunch of visitors coming in, high school football recruits for UNLV. We'll get to that in the 4 o'clock hour. But on the way back, we got to get to one of the other big stories locally, and that is what is happening with this stadium. All of a sudden, now we've got official word that the roof is delayed. The whole timeline could be thrown off. Are the Raiders going to be here? When the hell is UNLV going to start playing there? Adam Candy, our stadium expert, is in next.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
So while y'all at it right now, take care of y'all bodies, you know what I mean? Don't take care of y'all chicken, you feel me? Don't take care of y'all mentals, because look, we ain't lasting that long. So, I mean, you feel me? Start taking care of y'all mentals, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Marshawn Lynch, former Oakland Raider, with the pep talk at the press conference after Seattle gets booted. All right, we got some crazy stuff going on right now with this stadium we're building. The rumors were out there 2 months ago that there were some issues with UNLV playing at the stadium. Was it previous contracts that were screwed up? Was there a delay with the completion of the stadium? All of the above. Well, now it's out that there's some jeopardy in terms of getting the stadium done. Adam Candy's been following the beginning of this whole stadium thing from the very start, and he's on the road today, joins Cofield & Company. Adam, explain to people what's going on here with the roof. Now they're not going to be able to install the roof until freaking sometime in May?
So the long and short of this, when it comes down to the roof, is that you're looking at it not being completed until the end of May. Now, the Raiders will tell you that's not a big deal because it's not one of the critical tasks that has to get done. But the Stadium Authority, well, they retained an independent company early on in this process called Grand Canyon Development Partners. And this company is basically charged with monitoring the construction progress and making sure that from the Stadium Authority's interest, which is your interest and my interest, that's where the public money is, that everything is being kept on track. So the report that Grand Canyon put out says, all right, yeah, it's not a big deal that the roof isn't up yet, but it is a big deal if we get some weather between here and May that rains or hails or, God forbid, snows inside the stadium and screws up other things, that could put the timeline behind. So that is, obviously, with spring weather in Vegas, a potential issue.
I'll go back to the well again. This is also why a free and independent media needs to be allowed to ask questions, Candy, because folks will just fib right to your face about issues like this. And there's been a little bit of a truculent attitude at times coming from the stadium folks, right? Don Webb at times has been a little curt, a little bit short. And now we got a situation here, and here's the deal. I mean, it's one thing with the Raiders, because I suppose the NFL could do them a favor. Would it be a favor? It'd be a screw job in terms of trying to win games, but I guess you could push back the beginning of the season. Maybe you're not going to have – I'm talking about the home slate. You're not going to have that Sunday night football game coming out of the gates. They can adjust the schedule that way, but there's also the UNLV element here.
Oh, of course. It affects UNLV and the Raiders. And you mentioned the that was a kind word, using a truculent attitude from Don Webb. I would basically say that that's someone who treated me like the scum of the earth at every turn when I tried to talk to him. Some people will just no comment you. Yeah. Don Webb will laugh at you while he no comments you. Yep. And that is who the Raiders have chosen to manage the construction project. And so that's basically what you get. So from the Raiders' side, when you say the stadium folks, yeah, you're only going to get what you get out of the updates at the Stadium Authority meetings, of which there's one coming up on Thursday. Now, the folks on that side have been pretty open in talking to us about what's been going on with the stadium all the way throughout. But when it comes to the actual status of the construction project, Steve, here's the part that really worried me. When I looked at the article that Rick Velotta had in the Review Journal, where he discussed that there's some structural issue with the stadium, where Grand Canyon said the work was suspended pending resolution of challenges created as a result of overstressing the stadium's structural members. That's when we're talking about pulling those cables tight to put the roof up, and you're overstressing the stadium, and that's what's caused, in part, this two-month delay. That's something that, I mean, look, I don't have a degree in construction, but it at least gives me concern as to say, okay, this isn't just a matter of, you know, the parts weren't in yet. This is a matter of we got to make sure the engineering's right.
And this is crazy. It has so many areas it touches. How about just the fans? Like, when are my tickets good for? I've put up all this money. When do I get to go see the Raiders? When do I get to go see UNLV? You know, how far back could, you know, ticket allotment and ticket distribution be pushed back?
Yeah, that's a reasonable question in terms of, are the Raiders going to be able to play the season in the stadium? And I think you have to keep in mind, there could be a situation where are they not able to take the stadium for the first game, for the first two games? And then what does the NFL do? Does the NFL say, oh, it's okay if you contract to play in Oakland for one or two games? Not likely. Like, they're going to put a situation, they're not going to want any sort of uncertainty in terms of could this go farther and farther. They're basically going to say, we want you in one place for the whole season, because not only does it make more sense for the fans, but for TV, for everything. There's a whole mess of other concerns that come along with this, not even to mention UNLV's interest in the whole thing.
The NFL release date for the 2020 schedule is April 15th, somewhere in the 15th to the 21st range. That's the entire league finds out, home, road, the entire schedule. How the hell do you make a schedule that involves the Las Vegas Raiders if the roof may not be completed until the end of May into June? There's no certainty here. This is bizarro.
You make two contingencies, basically, right? Yep. That's all you can do. You can make a contingency for Oakland, and you can have a schedule set up for Vegas, but man, oh man, are you setting this up for failure? And let's not forget how things ended in the Coliseum. Remember the trash being thrown on the field at the Raiders at the end of the Jaguars game? You think the fans want them back at this point? I mean, for years we were talking about how loyal the Raider fans were, that they were still supporting the team, still selling out season tickets in the Coliseum. That didn't look like a fan base that wants that team back.
UNLV football schedule, we're just talking about the roof delay news that came out yesterday with Las Vegas Stadium, Raiders Stadium, the Owl. On the UNLV front, there's still questions about which games are going to be at this stadium. September 5th, La Tech. September 12th, Arizona State. Those were being discussed. The opener, it looked like that was 99% guaranteed to go down. That's Saturday, August 29th. But, I mean, I would think that's the one, as I started the conversation, that would be the spot that is most in jeopardy if there's a long delay. Or, as you pointed out, the independent monitoring service said, hey, if there's any weather, this becomes a real problem.
And keep in mind, when we talk about any of these dates, whether it's the August or September UNLV dates, when we talked about why the Rams stadium got pushed back a year and why they ended up having to push the Super Bowl back, it was because of rain. It was massive rains that slowed down that that construction project. Now, a different situation, because that was talking about the foundation of the stadium. The foundation is well and in on the stadium for the Raiders. It would just be a matter of the weather affecting fixtures inside the stadium. Now, again, I will let the Raiders have their say that this is not a critical piece of the project, and so it can be done in May and everything will be fine. But I think there's enough concern out there that people need to be asking questions.
Adam Candy with us. Last minute here, Adam. Let's talk about your day job, LegalSportsReport.com, and you cover the gaming industry in addition to working for VSiN and helping us out here on Cofield & Company. I want your reaction to this news. Indiana Gaming Commission announces that the state sportsbooks will be allowed to take bets on the color of Gatorade dumped on the winning coach of the Super Bowl, and to that point, other exotics, coin toss outcome, the player to correctly call the coin toss. Will there be a flea flicker? These are some of the examples. Who will the Super Bowl MVP thank first? Is this a good thing that finally someone in the U.S. is going to take bets like this?
Well, keep in mind that just because the state approves it doesn't mean that anyone's going to offer it. It's kind of been the same thing with Nevada. There are many more bet types allowed in Nevada than operators actually decide to offer. So what I would say about this is, if anyone in Indiana wants to get involved, good for them. They better just make sure that Darren Rovell isn't out there tweeting out Gatorade colors 3 hours before the game.
Yeah, that was a mess last year. You want to explain that one? He bragged about having inside information, right, on what the length of, or was it the set that the entertainment was going to play, or was it the length of the national anthem?
No, he bragged about having multiple pieces of inside information that go along those lines. Meanwhile, he works for the Action Network, which has interests in betting, and he also now is sponsored by PointsBet, one of the operators in New Jersey and Iowa that's been out there all year long. So all of these things that look like funny ha-ha on social media for years in the past have real-world implications if a legal sports betting operation is offering bets on them.
Adam, we appreciate a couple minutes. We'll see you on Thursday.
See you
there
then.
You go. Adam Candy stopping in. Actually, he's on the west side of town, was doing some work today, and wanted to get him on the stadium stuff since he's been Johnny on the spot on that for about 3 years. Real quick, I just wanted to give you an update. We were talking about UNLV and the games coming up and the schedule and the uncertainty and the fact that this weekend is going to be the first big weekend of visits for the new coaching staff headed up by Marcus Arroyo. And, you know, it's interesting. I heard someone the other day say, well, let's see what they can put together with the leftovers. I've seen about 9 or 10 different players, at least 9 or 10 different high school players, tweet about coming for a visit this weekend. This doesn't sound like a leftover. A kid named Edric Whitley out of Pflugerville, Texas. He's got his visit set. All right, well, UNLV is shooting high in some cases. UNLV visit January 17th, Miami on January 24th. After that, Ole Miss, and then two remaining official visits to come. So Marcus Arroyo and the staff going into deep waters to try to get players right out of the gates.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.